Tune in for performance today at 1 o'clock this afternoon and this evening at 8 p.m. on 102.1 FM WMUK from Western Michigan University. It's 5 minutes after 10 o'clock, getting started a little earlier this hour. Mostly cloudy skies expected today with only a 20% chance of rain showers until midday. Then we'll see a bit of sunshine this afternoon with a high in the mid-50s, clear overnight with lows around 42, and sunny for Tuesday with a high in the mid-60s. Joining me here today is Dr. Tom Evans, the director of the Kalamazoo Concert Band, and I bet we're both pretty glad it's not currently raining anymore.
That's right, I'm drying out.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough weekend.
Oh my goodness, I saw on the weather forecast last night with some of the rainfall averages around the
totals,
area.
Yeah.
It was over 7 inches in some places. That's
where does it all go?
I know, yeah, right?
Well, one place for us to go is to see the Kalamazoo Concert Band next Saturday night. In the progression of the week.
Yes.
It'll be on Saturday in Chenery Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. And as always, free admission.
And free parking. Yeah.
So this concert is called Rituals and Celebrations. And I was just thought my first question should be, is there anything you're particularly celebrating?
Well, I thought this very thing when I programmed this, that people were thinking maybe we're celebrating an anniversary. And truth be told is we're not. We're actually in our 56th season, which is really wonderful for us.
That's great. Yeah. It's an in-between year, but
Yeah, it is. But so for the longest time, I've been playing around with doing a program centering around rituals. And I was just going to call the program Rituals, but then I thought it's a little more than that. So I thought I just included the second word, celebrations. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you know, it's rituals and celebrations are something that's universal and is celebrated, you know, like it's, you know around the world, of course. And there's a lot of music associated with that. So I thought that'd be a fun program to put together.
Absolutely. And getting together in a ceremony of some kind, much like going to a concert or even going to the movie theater with a crowd or the real theater, there is a deepening and profundity that can occur.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
By sharing an experience with
Well, that's what festivals are about. Excuse me, festivals and any kind of celebration is all about sharing and, you know, celebrating humanity.
Okay, well, that's a great concept, but how do you put that into a program of music?
Yeah. We start with the Star Spangled Banner, and so the reason why we start there because that is a ritual. It's something that actually was begun during World War II, where symphony orchestras would program the national anthem at the start of the every concert season, at that time during World War II, every concert. And then what happened was after World War II, symphony orchestras moved to programming the national anthem at the start of every season. And that has become a tradition, a ritual, if you will. So we're starting our program, of course, with the Star Spangled Banner.
Is there a particular version that everyone uses, or are there alternate
options? There are a bazillion out there. We're doing an arrangement by Sean O'Loughlin, which is really a very dynamic one. It features a lot of trumpet fanfares throughout.
There was a little controversy when Stravinsky decided to set.
Yes, indeed.
Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, I recall that. That was it's interesting. It was an interesting time. So we're starting our program with the Star Spangled Banner, and then we move on to a festival prelude because it has prelude in the title, so of course it has to appear at the beginning of the program, right?
It doesn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah, right. So, but it's a great piece of music, and it deserves to be featured first in the program after the Star Spangled Banner, and it's a wonderful work by Alfred Reed. Actually, as it turns out, if you're looking for anniversaries, this is the 50th year of its publication.
And Alfred Reed, a little more about this composer.
Well, you know, he's a much revered composer in the band world. He's written a bunch of pieces that were premiered back in the 50s and 60s, and into the 70s as well. And his music is still vibrant today, and many band conductors around the country still program his works. A lot of his music represents a core repertoire for the band world.
How much of there is it? Could it fill up 10 CDs or something?
Oh, you know, I haven't thought about it in those terms, but 10 might be a stretch, but maybe not. So it shows you how prolific he is.
Wow, Alfred Reed. Well, why don't we give that a listen here?
Yes.
And remind listeners that the concert is Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Chenery Auditorium. That's a stirring piece of music.
Oh, I love that piece. What a great way to start a program, eh?
That's awesome. If you just tuned in, my guest is Tom Evans, who is the longtime director of the Kalamazoo Concert Band, which starts its 56th season in Chenery Auditorium on Saturday night, beginning with the Star-Spangled Banner. But then we hear this wonderful prelude by Alfred Reed.
Oh, it's got me excited just listening to that again. It's like, whoo, yeah, that's good stuff.
Now, the program, as we said before, is called Rituals and Celebrations, and wind music in particular, either for outdoor or indoor rituals and or celebrations, has long been the go-to sound.
Yeah, it has a long history. You know, at one time there was a classification of instruments based on outdoor instruments and indoor instruments, and they made a real distinction between the two. And it wasn't probably until maybe the 17th, 18th century that they started blending the outdoor instruments with the indoor instruments.
What kind of instruments were in each category?
Well, interesting. Well, of course, all the keyboard instruments, of course, would be indoors, as would be the string instruments. But then the wind instruments typically are outdoors. And some people might not think about the oboe, but the oboe and all the reed family's instruments were part of the outdoor instruments as well.
So the loud instruments were outside.
Yes, that's right. They use their outside voice.
And what about, wasn't this as far back as when instruments were called things like sackbuts and shawms?
Oh, exactly. That's exactly right.
That.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
When you had, village musicians, who would be tower musicians who would announcements from the tower. It would be fire watch and invaders and that sort of thing. So you had tower musicians.
You could talk for a while on the subject, couldn't you?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's fun. It's back in the Middle Ages, it's a hoot.
Well, we're going to skip a couple of selections before we hear the next piece of music, but maybe you'd want to tell us a little about
We start with the Star-Spangled Banner because that's a ritual established by symphony orchestras during World War II, and then we start with the prelude, a festival prelude by Alfred Reed, which we just heard, and then, of course, we're in the band world, and it's tradition and a ritual to always seem to program marches, so the march that I chose, which is next, is titled On Parade by Edwin Goldman. And there's kind of a double meaning here, because it's on parade, but parades too are festivals and celebrations. So it works really well. And that's a great march. It's a fun, fun march. I don't want to say that it's an obscure march, because it's not, but it's not your typical Sousa march. People tend to know, King Cotton and Liberty Bell and, of course, Stars and Stripes Forever.
Yeah.
All those, those standard ones, which are great marches, and they tend to get played more often. But On Parade should be heard more. It's a great parade march.
I just had an interview with Scott Borma about the University Symphonic Band that played yesterday,
mm-hmm.
And they played an unusual Sousa march called Manhattan Beach, where it has a fade out mm-hmm. at the end rather than a big finish.
Yeah.
So they're not all the same.
No, they're not. But like I said, what happens is you get to top 10 and they get recycled a lot. And that tends to be a problem, I think, because there are other great marches out there.
And how does the program continue?
Oh, yeah, thank you. So then we do a piece called Passages. And, of course, Passages, you know, rite of passage is very much an important ritual that's celebrated universally as well. And that actually features an alto sax solo throughout, and that's played by our principal alto saxophonist, Dale Working. And then we go on to an unending legacy. Because, you know, legacy is what you're, it's a little bit of a stretch in terms of rituals, but, you know, when, you know, how we move through the world and what we do, what kind of a impact we have on each other, creates a lasting legacy. So that's kind of, I saw it as both a ritualistic and celebratory. And then we finish the first half with Wedding Dance. It's a piece by Jacques Press. It's actually an orchestral piece, but it's been transcribed for band a couple of times. And this is let me tell you a little bit about it. It's basically the Hora, which is a H-O-R-A, mm-hmm. and that is the chair dance that's associated with Jewish weddings. And have you ever been to a Jewish wedding?
No, not yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're missing out, let me tell you.
I went to my first bar mitzvah.
they're all talk about celebrations. So there are celebrations right there.
Yeah.
Like I said, there are a million celebrations that I could have included in rituals in this program, but
sure.
You know, they only have so much time. Maybe we'll do part two. Anyway, so the Hora is a chair dance, and this is the part in the celebration where the bride and groom are hoisted on chairs high above the crowd, and everyone just dances in a circle around them, and there's this klezmer music playing, and it's oh my, it's a hoot. And of course, you know, the bride and groom are they look like they're enjoying it, but at the same time, you can see a little bit of fear in their face because they're probably easily 6 feet high, maybe higher, and those chairs don't come with seatbelts.
Right.
And again, there are stories of some people falling out of them, so it can't be a concern.
Yeah.
I think it's based on how much the reception party has drunk prior to hoisting them.
Okay, well, let's jump back into the music.
Yes.
My guest is Tom Evans, leading the Kalamazoo Concert Band in concert on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. It's a free concert
yes.
in Chenery Auditorium called Rituals and Celebrations. And let's hear that wedding dance. Tom, that's a terrific dance.
Isn't it though? Makes you feel like doing backflips in the front yard.
Absolutely. It's everything you said and more. We're in a festive spirit here at WMUK talking about rituals and celebrations, which opens the season with the Kalamazoo Concert Band. That leads me to ask, I assume that the concert band took a break over the summer.
Well, yes. Well, except in June, we do have a brief summer concert series.
Okay.
And so then since, yes, we haven't been in session since June.
At least a couple,
yeah.
Almost 3 months. What's it like when you all get back together in the old band room and time to start a new season?
It's very social, as you can imagine. People, you know, and it's interesting too because you typically see tighter bonds with people within sections, but not necessarily. But that's, you know, so you first see, you know, people greeting each other in their section because that's who you're really closest with. When you as a musician, you kind of bond with your section. But then, of course, it spreads to other sections as well. And it's a hoot. So I do take a little more time. I'm getting to the downbeat on the first rehearsal. At the first rehearsal.
Can't
so,
help it.
Yeah, well, because, you know, people want to chat, and I get that. And then, you know, then we have to get down to business. So, but we always have a break midway through our rehearsal, and about 10 minutes, and then so people can socialize then.
And how large is the band?
Well, you know, our roster lists well over 100, probably 112 or so. But we typically don't have that many on stage at any for any performance. We're around 85, 90, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more, depending on the availability of the musicians. So the people, you know, we have people from all walks of life and all age groups, and there are many people who are retired, and so some of them, particularly for our February concert, are, you know, they're someplace warmer.
I still think as a group that might be unrivaled in our area. I mean, the symphony sometimes has to put 85 people on stage, but usually you're around 70.
Yeah, we're big. We pack a punch. It's a lot of fun. I tell you, they're amazing musicians, and they're wonderful people to work with. Great, we have fun, and we have fun making music.
A lot of them find ways to make music outside of the concert band as well, in smaller groups, different styles of music.
Oh, absolutely, We have woodwind quintets, brass quintets, that kind of thing forming. Sometimes flute choirs.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So do you ever have to hold auditions, or does it just maintain itself
somehow? No. Well, yes, it's the bylaws require us to hold auditions, so it's by audition only memberships. Membership is by audition only, and so typically I listen to the auditionee along with the principal person of that section, wherever they're auditioning for.
Okay. Yeah. And those are held in fall or in spring?
No, we typically open it up at the beginning of each cycle, because like I said, sometimes people come and go, and people move because they have jobs, and so we have a lot of flexibility, but not a lot, some flexibility, and so sometimes our openings, you know, as a flute player, you can appreciate this, the request I get to audition for the Kalamazoo Concert Band most often comes from flute players, and as you know, flute players along with sopranos, that's there's so many of them.
Are you saying there were a dime a dozen?
Well, I didn't, those are your words, but I mean, right now, on the roster, I think I carry close to 14 flutes, which is really, honestly, way too many. But I try to make room for people. You know, the bottom line is I'm a true music educator, I want to give people opportunities to make music, because that's good. It's good for the soul.
Could we hear a little bit about how you actually do balance this with your duties as a professor of music at Kalamazoo College? Do you teach private lessons there, or group lessons, or
at Kalamazoo College?
Yeah.
Oh, my responsibilities at Kalamazoo College is I have the at one time it was called the Symphonic Band, but now I've changed the title to the Academy Street Winds, and that has become like the college orchestra, the K Philharmonia. It's a combined ensemble of community members and college students. So I changed the name to really be more welcoming to community people. So that's the Academy Street Winds. And so I do that, and they also have the jazz band, and then I teach one academic course for every term. We're in a trimester system there, and this term I'm teaching program music, stories and sound. So you do things like Paul Dukas' Sorcerer's Apprentice and Debussy's Afternoon of a Faun, that kind of stuff.
And these are for all students, not music-specific students?
The courses general. That I tend to teach are more general. I try to invite more of the non-major to become acquainted with our department. And I should finish. The final course that I teach spring term is basically a beginning bands course. And last year I had 135 students in the class. It shattered school records for attendance. Students enrolled in a class. 135 students. It's unbelievable. And they've said, I've always wanted to play the saxophone, or I always wanted to play drums or whatever. And so I have these students in there, and they go from how do I put this clarinet together to giving a concert in 8 weeks. It's a hoot. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And the student body being quite small.
Yeah.
That's a significant percentage.
Are you ready? It's 10% of the student body. It's 10% of the student body is enrolled in that class. 10%, isn't that something?
Oh, I'm just impressed that that your life is bringing people together to make music in all sorts of ways, and being their guide.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a hoot. I enjoy it. Like I said, I'm a true music educator through and through, and I just want to make music available to as many people as possible.
And how about you and your trombone?
I still play. Actually, I'm playing on this concert. I feel a little embarrassed, because it's like, you know, I don't want to be what might seem to be self-serving, but I like playing my trombone. I have my doctorate is in trombone performance from University of Michigan, and so I told the band, says, look, there's a there's a small Dixieland combo in this piece coming up, one of the pieces we're programming. And if you don't mind, I'm going to sit in and turn the baton over to the assistant conductor, Brian Shetterly. So Brian will be doing Frank Tekeli's Amazing Grace, which is a wonderful setting of Amazing Grace. And then he'll stay on the podium. And then we follow Amazing Grace with At a Dixieland Funeral. And that's when the Dixieland combo comes out.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, where we left off was the end of the first half.
Yes.
With the wedding dance. And
isn't that a great way to end the first half? Woo-hoo! It's like you have a blood transfusion.
So what happens at the beginning of the
Well, we open up with half. Carnegie Anthem, right? And so Carnegie Hall. So how does that tie in with rituals and celebrations? Well, because every musician, as you know, has warm-up rituals, right? We all have maybe pre-performance rituals, you know, wearing a lucky bow tie or, you know, yeah. I don't know. But, you know, we all have these things that we do as rituals before we perform. And so of course, the old joke is, you know, the person who's lost on the street in New York City and is looking for Carnegie Hall and asks a New Yorker, you know, hey, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? And of course, the jaded New Yorker says, practice, practice, practice. So we start with a Carnegie Anthem to open our second half.
Okay. Is there any particular piece that you're looking forward to sharing?
Yeah, there is. It's a real simple piece. We should probably play this. It's something your audience probably is not expecting to hear. Can you cue up Factory Riffs? So, of course, we tend to think about celebrations and rituals as being grandiose and monumental, and they are, but they're also rituals that we do daily, you know, how we are, you know, our morning rituals before we go out the door to work, our evening rituals before we go to bed. We all have these rituals. And so, and of course, going to work, you know, the 9 to 5 or 8 to 4 or 7 to 3 grind that we all have, you know, it's part of a ritual too. So, and I actually come from Pittsburgh area, and I worked for 4 summers in steel mills. So I know about factory life. Let me tell you, I know about factory life. And so I thought, you know, let's celebrate, you know, the blue collar worker, the hard hat. And so we're doing this tune called Factory Riffs, and it's a hoot. And so I programmed this because we are a family friendly venue. So like we try to put things in there for kids. And so this is really inserted for the kids, but I think adults will love this too. Do you have it queued up?
I'm ready to go.
Oh, check this out. Factory Riffs.
I'm with Tom Evans, and we just heard, was that Factory Riff?
Factory Riffs, yeah. So I mentioned at the top that that I programmed this mostly for the children, but knowing that and hoping that the audience would like it, and I think they will, but I also was tossed a bone to the percussion section because they're really busy back here. All those factory noises you're hearing were made out of the sounds come from the percussion section.
That comes from a writer named Matt Conaway.
Yeah.
I wonder when he got the inspiration to make that.
I did know his bio briefly, and I've forgotten because a couple months ago when I was researching the music. I think he's an associate professor somewhere, and I think he's in charge of a marching band. I mean, if you listen to this, it really has a marching band kind of a quality to it. So,
you know, one of the great things about going to a concert band performance is you're not going to hear just 3 works, the overture,
yeah.
The concerto, and the
symphony. We're programming, what, like 14 pieces here? Because most of them are like 2.5-3 minutes long. Some are 5.5-6 minutes long. So if you come and you say, I don't like this piece, well, you don't have to wait very long till you hear the next one. And the other thing I'm really proud of about this program is that the variety is incredible. I mean, we cover everything from Dixieland funerals to Alfred Reed's A Festival Prelude, you know, so.
And you've done that pretty much every time out when you go to put a program together.
I do. I try to give something for everybody. Yeah. And like I said, I always try to find something for the kids. And usually that means it's a musical. But this time I didn't find one. Although I came close to programming Fiddler on the Roof because of, traditions, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Yeah. Sorry, absolutely. I can't sing very well, certainly not in the morning.
Well, here's the time that maybe you could give us a sneak peek about the rest of the season, because the concert band will be back in Chenery Auditorium with these wonderful free concerts that bring in lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
What would be next? Would it be Christmas?
Yeah, we have our annual Christmas holiday concert, and we hold in Miller Auditorium because we typically get well over 3,000 people in attendance. The concert is free, but you need tickets to get in, so that's to help with crowd control.
Yeah, anticipate.
Yeah, so, and like I said, we are always well over 3,000. There's Wonder Concert, I think, with Kathy Mattei. We came close to filling the hall with 3,400 people.
Amazing.
Because Miller holds 35. And this year's guest artist is Jim Brickman.
So I know that name.
Yeah,
he's been in Kalamazoo. Famous.
Yeah, he is famous. He's been in town a bunch of times. He's a singer, songwriter, and jazz pianist.
Absolutely.
And he's been nominated for Grammy Awards and many other awards. And he's probably familiar to many of your audience listeners.
Of course.
Yeah, he's a famous name, a big name, Jim Brickman. And so he's going to be featured with the Kalamazoo Concert Band this December 1st. You'll need tickets. To get tickets, just go to your browser and plug in Kalamazoo Concert Band. I mean, if you want your address, it's www that we all know. But y'all sit. Skip all that. Just type in Kalamazoo Concert Band. You'll get our website. And somewhere on that page, you're going to find directions on how to get tickets. They're free. But like I said, you need tickets to get in. Now, with that being said, as I said, even our most well-attended performance with Kathy Mattei with 3,400 people, that still meant there were 100 seats left over. So say you're not quite sure if you can really go to the concert December 1st based on your schedule, you'll kind of wait and see. Well, and all of a sudden you find on December 1st that you happen to be free unexpectedly and you don't have tickets and you're thinking, oh, too bad. No, well, we're saying just show up. I'm sure there'll be tickets for you.
It can be accommodated, but
yeah.
But for the sake of organization,
that's right.
It helps to have the tickets in
that's
advance.
Right. That's right.
I understand that. And will this be your first time working with Jim Brickman?
Yes, it will be. I've been a fan of his for decades, actually, so I'm looking forward to working with him.
Fantastic. And then there will be February concert
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, our February concert. You know, I'm not sure how I got into this routine, but talk about routines and rituals, but I tend to do things that are more cultural or intercultural for the February concerts, or either that or something really, you know, kind of really off that's not typical, something that's really unique. But for this concert, I'm sticking with my cultural themes, and we're doing Iberian inspiration. So Spanish music. Oh, and our guest for that is the Western Jazz Quartet with Tom Kniffick. And we're actually bringing in Scott Cowan also to play trumpet. So it's going to be a quintet because Spanish music really features the trumpet quite a bit. So that's going to be fun. I mean, I'm telling you right now, that program is going to be a real splash.
Well, you've got some heavy hitters coming in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so because last February we did Arabian Nights and Carolyn Keeble came in. Remember, she came in
Igor Howitt.
Yes, that's right. Very good. Playing the oud, and oh, that was probably the best concert in the history of the concert band.
Cool.
Oh, it was great. So that was so successful. I thought, well, let's keep this thing going. And you know, you can't go wrong with Spanish music. You know, so that's Iberian Inspirations in February, and then we finish our season in April with. Are you ready? A program titled Fun and Games. Yeah.
Right,
a lot
up
of
your alley.
Yeah. What do you mean? And they're going to be, there'll be a lot of baseball themed, it's going to be a lot of baseball themed music with that program as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Roller coasters and all kind of stuff. That's Fun and Games. Yeah. And it features our youth soloist as well, our annual competition for a youth soloist.
Well, I'm talking to Tom Evans, who leads the Kalamazoo Concert Band, which, it's a proud organization that starts its season this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. with a concert in Chenery Auditorium called Rituals and Celebrations. And there is a lot to celebrate just in
life.
In life. Bringing back.
Heck yeah.
Bringing back a music.
Every day I get out of bed, I'm celebrating. I'm telling you. And I'm in good health. I'm serious. I celebrate life.
Absolutely. Well, let's take another piece of music to listen to.
What do you want to listen to next?
I'm going in order of the program, and I'm tempted to jump to Dixieland, but I'm...
Oh, you could. You can go there. Why not? That's a fun one. It's a Dixieland Jazz Funeral. So, you know, I should probably mention to your audience that this kind of features if that's what you're going to play next, at a Dixieland Jazz Funeral, it features what's often called the second line. And people, or some people say, what is the second line? Of course, if you're a jazz musician, you know what the second line is, but maybe your audience doesn't. So let me explain. The first line in jazz funeral processions was saved for the musicians, for the funeral director, for the family members of the deceased, and of course, the deceased. And then the second line were the people, you know, friends and maybe the more distant relatives. So that was the second line. Friends, neighbors, you know, distant relatives, they were the second line. So when you processed to the cemetery, the front line, the musicians, where the musicians were, they would play, you know, Christian hymns and kind of, you know, a closer walk to thee kind of a thing. And then they would have the ceremony at the gravesite. And then on the way back to the reception, they would break into celebration. And actually, this has its roots in West African culture. So there's this idea of being somber to the gravesite and at the gravesite, but after the interment, then you have this real, you dance, you celebrate the person's life. And so as we know, much of the South was inhabited by people from West Africa, shall we say, slaves, you know, so we know that. And so they brought that part of the culture, they brought with them. So that remained. And so that we have this today. So as we all know, many people know, New Orleans still has a very much of a parade culture. Every city has its unique identity, but one of the things that New Orleans has is a parade culture. These folks parade a lot, and it comes from this funeral procession, right? And it comes from the second line. The first line is, like I said, is all somber and stuff, but the second line was the moment of celebration. Well, so by extension then, the people in New Orleans then just, you know, for any reason or no reason, they would have a parade, and when they call it, that's the second line. And so you might hear that term from time to time.
Yeah,
that's the second line.
I've heard that term for a long time, but I just thought it was the people who bring up the back and make the happy music.
No, it's the first, though. Yeah, once again, so it's kind of clever, right? The first line, musicians, funeral director, the family members of the deceased and the deceased, all somber going to the gravesite. On the return back from the gravesite, it's celebration. Oh, and the second line people are the people behind, right? The neighbors, friends, distant relatives, right? That's the second line, right? But they make up the mass, you know, big crowd. And so then on the way back from the cemetery, right, the Dixieland band cuts loose and everyone starts dancing, right?
that's the typical thing I think of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so people get decked out in their finest, you know, with their parasols and their banners and their fine, you know, hats and bonnets. And, you know, you got the whole thing going on. And it's a hoot. So, but like I said, so the New Orleans folks embrace that, and they continue that with, like, skip the funeral part and just do the second, like I said, second line celebrations.
Well, and here we just get in a line of cars.
I know. Yeah, we need to.
It's a nice walking culture there too.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Yeah, so yeah, it's a hoot. Have you been to New Orleans?
Just once.
Yeah. Well, you may have caught some of those parades. I was fortunate enough to have seen one once, which is a hoot. I mean, so they get out there and they, I mean, it's. These folks dance in the street, which is, you know, what a celebration of life.
Well, why don't we hear a little of this second line music?
Yeah, so it actually starts it's a funeral procession, if you will, and so it actually begins with going to the gravesite, the cemetery, and then it breaks into the second line celebration.
Thank you.
I think that's just what the doctor ordered here. We're looking at a very colorful program that's set up for this Saturday, and we have, you know, passed over quite a lot of colorful music.
Like I said, there are a lot of short numbers here, but the variety is incredible. But not everything is upbeat. We do some, you know, reflective works as well.
Absolutely.
In fact, two of them are passages in an Unending Legacy. Those are really rather somber and quite profound works. They're really, really moving. And then on the second half, we have Amazing Grace, of course.
Now, what are some of, let me get back to the title again, Rituals and Celebrations. We just looked at a funeral rite from New Orleans, of course, and we've looked at, you know, work rituals, the factory riffs.
Right.
Factory whiffs might not be as exciting of a piece. You looked kind of at life and religious rituals too with the mm-hmm. wedding mm-hmm, dance. Yes. What yeah. are some other things that sparked your imagination?
Well, of course, you know, there is the graduation. Graduations is a big one, but I just did not want to program.
Da, da,
da, da. I mean, as a musician, I've played that piece or conducted that piece. If I never hear that piece again, I'm okay with that. It's like that wasn't gonna appear on the program. I don't care who asked for it. You know, even a large donor, I would probably say, probably not. I mean, that piece is really tired.
Well, it's really repetitive.
If
500 people are graduating.
Well, the thing is, but that piece actually is not bad if they would continue it. They only do the first part of it, and so I mean, Elgar, it's actually a much more interesting piece if you listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But we never seem to get to the whole thing when we do that. We just kind of repeat that da 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 da. Yeah, that refrain is like ugh. So I thought about that, and of course, if we get an encore, and I'm hoping we do, probably the biggest ritual will be recognizable by all, but it's done in a really cool way. So we're hoping for an encore, because then we can play the one ritual that I'm not going to tell you. Should I want me to tell you it is? No, I just keep people guessing. They should come and find out.
I'll drop a hint. It has to do with a poet.
That's an obscure hint.
Whose birthday is January 25th?
That's how we end the program. Okay, that I get that. I'm talking about our encore piece, which you don't have in front of you.
I don't even know what your encore is, so I can't give
it. I'll whisper to you. Remember?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you should come in. Yeah, that makes sense to you, right? That's the biggest, one of the biggest, that's probably the most ritualistic and celebratory thing that we do.
it's so obvious that it isn't obvious.
That's right. But it's on the program. So yeah. When the people hear it, they go, oh, yeah.
Now, what I was alluding to, we can give away.
We can, yeah. We finished the program with Auld Lang Syne. We finished the second half. The whole program ends with Auld Lang Syne. And I thought, you know, it announces the end of one season and the beginning of another. It announces the end of our program, but at the same time the beginning of our season. And it's something that people can participate in, because they will sing the last chorus at the very end of this setting. And it's a beautiful work. It's by Chip Davis Mannheim Steamroller.
And the music is by rather, the lyrics are by Robert Burns.
Yeah, and it is January 25th. Have you ever been to one of the birthdays? They're fun.
Yes.
Yeah, they're fun. Wear a kilt and eat haggis. Yeah, haggis. Haggis. I like it. I do. It's some people, I'm not going to eat that. I think it depends on who makes it and what kind of which recipe they're using, but I went back for seconds.
Well, I have a childhood memory of my father having to rest for 2 days in a dark room after Robert Burns' celebration.
Yeah, that's never good. Or maybe it was. I
don't know. Yeah, well.
So we finished our program with Auld Lang Syne, and it's, like I said, I think it's the right place in the program, because most programs end with something really upbeat and you know, whatever. But this ends in a very quiet way.
After the Radetzky March.
That's right, because the Radetzky March precedes this, right? Everyone claps along, because that's a New Year's Day celebration. It's established by Vienna Phil. So, yeah, so we're doing that. And then, so if you're doing New Year's, we back up just maybe a few hours earlier, and then we just sort of, you know, do Auld Lang Syne. So.
Well, Tom, I feel like we could talk, and I feel like you could program another couple hours of this music. But
rituals and celebrations.
I know you have to get back to school.
You have a rehearsal at 11 o'clock. I got to hop in the car and run over there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing some of the preview with me here on WMUK this morning.
It's my pleasure. I hope to see a lot of people there. It's going to be great. It's this Saturday, 7:30, Chenery Auditorium, the Kalamazoo Concert Band, and admission is free, parking is free. It's family friendly. I should mention that Keith Thompson is our MC. So come see, say hello to Keith.
He's been a loyal friend, hasn't
he? He actually loves being a part of the KCB.
That's great. That's great. Well, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you.